Imagine sailing toward what looks like, just a barren, sun-baked rock out in the middle of the Aegean Sea.
Right, just totally desolate.
Exactly. You're expecting a sleepy, whitewashed fishing village, the kind of place where, I don't know, a couple of old wooden boats are just bobbing in a quiet harbor.
Sure.
But then you turn a corner past this rugged cliff face, and instead, you just collide head-on with a grand 19th-century European metropolis, painted in these vibrant terracotta, ochre, and cream colors.
It is a profound visual shock.
Yeah.
I mean, the port of Giallos on the island of Symi, it completely shatters your typical architectural expectations of the Greek islands.
It really does.
Okay.
So today we are decoding that shock. We're doing a deep dive into a comprehensive guide all about Symi Island tours departing from Rhodes.
Yeah, and our mission today isn't just to, rattle off a nautical timetable of how to get from point A to point B.
Definitely not. We are going to unpack the sociology of this island, explore how its extreme geography dictates the way humans interact with it, and, well, figure out how to navigate its dual personality.
Which is crucial, because approaching a destination with this much historical density, it requires more than just buying a ferry ticket. You really need to understand the underlying mechanics of the environment.
Right.
Like, just for context, Symi is located about 45 kilometers northwest of Rhodes, so that's roughly a 50 to 60 minute boat ride. And because there is absolutely no airport, the maritime approach is the only approach.
Okay, let's unpack this. Because arriving by sea forces you to confront that striking, tiered amphitheater of neoclassical mansions immediately. I was reading through the source guide, and the vibrant colors, these deep mustard yellows and rich siennas, they stand out so starkly against the arid landscape. It's tempting to cynically assume they just, like, painted it up for the modern Instagram crowd,
Yeah.
like a sort of Mediterranean theme park.
What's fascinating here is that those colors and that specific architectural style are direct artifacts of a very real, very aggressive 19th century microeconomy.
Right.
Symi was not a quaint fishing outpost. It was an industrial powerhouse. To understand the terracotta balconies, you actually have to look beneath the water.
The sponge diving industry.
Exactly.
The sources detail how Symi essentially monopolized the Mediterranean sponge trade. They weren't just harvesting, they were running this massive, highly organized, and honestly incredibly dangerous industrial operation.
Oh, absolutely. The mechanics of that trade were brutal, but highly lucrative. Originally, divers practiced what was called naked diving.
Which sounds intense.
It was. They would hold their breath and use a heavy marble stone called a scandalopetra to basically drag themselves down to the seafloor as fast as possible.
Wow.
Yeah. But later in the 19th century, they adopted the scafandro.
Oh, the heavy copper-helmeted diving suit.
That's the one. That technological shift allowed them to stay underwater longer and harvest vast quantities of sponges. They dominated international markets from London to the Middle East.
And the influx of capital from that global monopoly was just staggering. They paired the sponge trade with a massive shipbuilding industry, too, using timber sourced from the nearby Anatolian coast.
Right. And that maritime dominance allowed the island's merchants and sea captains to travel extensively.
So they saw the neoclassical trends in places like Venice, Marseille, and Trieste.
And decided to replicate them back home. The aesthetics became a proxy for cosmopolitan status.
Ah,
The merchants consciously rejected the traditional utilitarian whitewashed cubic houses usually seen in the Cyclades. They imported skilled artisans, expensive European architectural plans, and even the high-end pigments needed to create those ochre and terracotta facades.
so the harbor you sail into today is really a preserved ledger of that immense 19th century wealth.
Precisely. It's built out of sheer profit.
But that economic boom created an immediate spatial problem, didn't it? The harbor, Giallos, has a very narrow strip of flatland.
Very narrow.
So when the population exploded to accommodate the booming sponge and shipbuilding industries, they ran out of room almost immediately. The physical footprint of that wealth had nowhere to go but straight up the vertical cliff faces enclosing the bay.
Yeah, the geography absolutely dictated the social and physical layout of the entire settlement. Giallos remained the commercial heart. The docks, the custom houses, the shipyards.
But the residential zone, Corio, had to be carved directly into the steep upper hills.
Exactly.
Connecting the two is the Kali Strata. The guide translates this as the beautiful way, but looking at the topography, it functions more like the central artery of a vertical city.
Right.
We were talking about a broad stone staircase of 500 steps. It wasn't built for a casual scenic stroll. It was the commercial spine where the wealthiest merchants built their homes.
so they could literally look down over the harbor and monitor their merchant fleets. The engineering required to build those mansions on such a severe incline, using donkeys and manual labor to haul imported stone and timber up 500 steps, is just a testament to the sheer financial will of those sea captains.
But knowing that history also frames a very practical modern challenge, if you are a traveler with limited mobility, navigating a vertical 19th century city built on a cliff is a serious hurdle.
It is. Topography enforces accessibility. The guide makes a vital distinction here. The harbor area of Gyalos is flat and mostly accessible.
Okay.
So you can experience the visual impact of the architecture, the waterfront cafes, and the history without climbing a single stair.
That's good to know.
But reaching the upper lanes of Koryo requires navigating that severe incline. Uh-huh. It essentially forces visitors to self-select their experience based on their physical limits.
The sweeping views from the top of the Kali Strata, you know, looking down at the ochre rooftops meeting the Blue Aegean, are definitely the definitive reward for the climb.
Without a doubt.
But this steep, unforgiving geography doesn't just define the town. It dictates the entire coastline of the island. The sources highlight that the interior of Semei is aggressively rugged and mostly roadless.
Yeah, plunging cliffs meet the sea all around the island, which leaves the vast majority of its hidden coves and bays with zero land access. You physically cannot pave a road down to these inlets.
Which brings up an interesting tension for the independent traveler, because the instinct for many is to avoid organized tours. They look at the public ferry from Rhodes, see a cheap ticket, and think, oh, I'll just take the municipal water bus to Gyalos and explore on my own.
Right. A lot of people do that.
But reading the geographic layout, that strategy fundamentally misinterprets how the island operates. Why book a tour at all? Why not just buy a ticket for the public ferry?
Well, a public ferry is purely logistical transit. Its sole economic purpose is to move bodies and cargo from the port of Rhodes to the port of Gyalos as efficiently as possible.
It's just a bus on the water.
Exactly. It has a deep draft, it moves fast, and it does not deviate. If you rely solely on the public ferry, your entire experience of Semei will be confined to the paved harbor.
The organized boat tours, then, aren't just packaged sightseeing. They are the necessary keys to the island's roadless borders.
Precisely. The boats used for these full-day excursions have shallower drafts, which allows them to navigate into those inaccessible swimming bays.
Like the ones the guide mentions, these tours stop at hidden coves where the water is pristine and sheltered. Places that remain uncrowded even in peak August, simply because a car can never reach them.
And one of the most significant stops on these maritime routes is the monastery of Taxiarchus Mikhail Panormitis. It's located on the far southern tip of the island.
The guide is very specific about the dress code here, actually. Shoulders and knees must be covered, as it is a functioning religious site.
Yes, very important.
They provide wraps at the entrance if you forget, thankfully. But looking at the map, Panormitis is incredibly isolated from the commercial buzz of Gyalos.
And that isolation is an architectural and spiritual feature, not a bug. Panormitis is a major landmark of Byzantine and post-Byzantine design, situated in a deeply sheltered natural bay.
To protect against pirates, right?
Historically, yes, that natural harbor protected the monks from pirate raids. But there is also a profound sociological link back to the island's industrial past.
How so?
Well, sponge diving was lethally dangerous. The decompression sickness from the early diving suits claimed so many lives. So this isolated, protected monastery became a vital spiritual anchor where sailors and divers would seek blessings before embarking on perilous, months-long expeditions across the Mediterranean.
Wow. So the religious site and the industrial danger were just deeply intertwined.
Completely. If we connect this to the bigger picture, the extreme geography of Semei, the steep cliffs, the roadless interior, the isolated bays, it acts as an immense preservation tool.
That makes total sense.
In an era where global tourism often bulldozes delicate coastal ecosystems to build mega resorts, Semei's very topography physically rejects overdevelopment. The landscape defends itself.
The inconvenience is the preservation. You can't build a massive concrete hotel on a hidden beach if you can't get an excavator down the cliff.
Exactly.
But while the geography protects the island from structural overdevelopment, it doesn't protect the harbor from the temporal flood of mass tourism. The source guide makes it very clear. Timing your visit alters the entire psychological landscape of Gyalos.
Oh, timing is everything. The tourism economy operates on a very rigid timeline. During the peak summer months of July and August, the small port experiences a dramatic daily tide.
The late morning rush.
Yes. Large cruise ships and massive day boats from Rhodes arrive by late morning, basically unleashing thousands of visitors into a confined, tiered harbor all at once.
The acoustic physics of that are wild to think about.
Truly.
You have a town built like a stone amphitheater. When 3,000 day trippers flood the waterfront, that architectural bowl captures and amplifies every engine rumble, every tour guide's megaphone, and just the sheer volume of foot traffic.
It temporarily transforms the character of the town from a historic maritime settlement into a congested transit hub.
Yeah, that sounds stressful.
To navigate this, the source material offers strict logistical parameters. If you're traveling in peak season, an arrival before 10 a.m. is required.
Just to beat the crowds.
Right. That window allows you to walk the Kali strata or absorb the architecture before the acoustic and physical congestion peaks.
Or you shift the calendar entirely and aim for the shoulder months. The guide notes that May, June, and September offer the most reliable sea conditions and warm water, but with a fraction of the midsummer crowds.
Which is a great option.
But there is another strategy in the sources that completely sidesteps the midday rush. And it involves changing the clock rather than the calendar, the Simi by Night Tour.
Ah, yes. This itinerary approaches the island through a completely different sociological lens.
Because by late afternoon, the massive day tripper boats blow their horns and retreat to Rhodes. The thousands of transient visitors leave.
And as that happens, the acoustic bowl of the harbor empties out.
Right. The noise drops, returning to the sounds of lapping water and local conversation. Booking an evening departure from Rhodes means you arrive precisely as the island is exhaling.
And the visual environment transforms alongside the acoustic one. The harsh, flattening midday sun is gone.
So what does this all mean?
Well, instead of that glare, the evening light hits those imported ochre and terracotta pigments at a low angle. The shadows lengthen across the neoclassical facades, highlighting the depth and detail of the 19th century stonework in a way that is just completely invisible at noon.
It's like staying for the VIP after party once the general admission crowd has gone home. The evening tour strips away the frantic checklist-style consumption of the island.
It really does.
The waterfront restaurants transition from serving rushed tourists sprinting for a ferry to catering to locals and the few overnight guests. You experience the space at its intended historical rhythm.
And that rhythm extends to the journey itself. A day trip concludes by sailing back to Rhodes in the bright, exposed afternoon sun. The evening tour alters that dynamic. The return crossing happens in the darkness of the Aegean.
Standing on the deck of a boat, watching the amber lights of a 19th century sponge-diving metropolis slowly shrink and disappear into the blackness of the sea.
It's beautiful.
That isn't just a transport logistic. That is a cinematic, deeply reflective experience. It reinforces the island's isolation.
It reminds the traveler that they're leaving a distinct, self-contained micro-world suspended in the sea, rather than just, you know, driving away from a tourist attraction.
Okay, let's synthesize the crucial data points from our sources. So you have the definitive blueprint for navigating your deep dive into Simi. First, respect the timeline.
Absolutely.
The 10 a.m. threshold is the dividing line between an authentic exploration and a crowded, stressful encounter. If you want the atmosphere without the chaos, the early boat or the evening tour is your optimal strategy.
Second, acknowledge the physical reality of the terrain. The Kali Strata offers the ultimate vantage point over the harbor, but its 500 stone steps require exertion.
So plan accordingly.
Right. And know that the flat harbor still offers a profoundly rich historical experience if the climb is beyond your limits.
Third, if your maritime route includes the southern tip, recognize the spiritual gravity of the Panormitis Monastery by adhering to the dress code shoulders and knees covered.
Good tip.
And fundamentally, remember that the public ferry is a logistical tool, but the organized boat tours are the mechanical keys required to unlock the pristine, roadless coves that define the island's coastline.
All of this analysis forces us to confront a larger, more delicate reality about historic microeconomies like Simi.
What do you mean?
Well, we noted how the extreme geography protects the island from paved overdevelopment. But the island's entire existence, first its 19th century sponge-diving wealth, and now its 21st century tourism appeal, relies entirely on the pristine conditions of the surrounding Mediterranean water.
Oh, I see where you're going.
The sponge industry originally collapsed in part due to disease tied to shifting water conditions. Today, as global temperatures rise and the Mediterranean warms, one has to wonder, how long can an island whose entire economic and social survival is tethered to the sea remain protected?
That is a chilling thought.
Geography can block a bulldozer, but it cannot block a changing climate.
That's something to really mull over. Keep exploring, keep interrogating the history beneath the architecture, and keep seeking out those quiet, roadless corners of the world while they are still here to be found. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive.